Welcome to Blueprint to Boom, your plan for taking a small idea and building something big. Hello and welcome to Blueprint to Boom, the podcast for small businesses. My name is David Henderson Begg. I've been running small businesses for 30 years or more. I've seen a lot, I've done a lot, I've made a lot of mistakes. And that's the premise of this podcast. It's to put down some ideas, some bullet points that are going to help you to not make the same mistakes that I've made and to follow some best practice. And over the years, I have met a lot of very interesting people. Some of them run their own business. Some of them are advisors to small business. My guest today is both.
Hello.
Welcome to Margaret Anthony, my friend and advisor, who is a partner in the accountancy firm Hardcastle Burton, based in Northwood in northwest London. I always have to think about east and west. There we go. Northwest London, that's right, isn't it? Welcome, Margaret.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the second episode of Blueprint to Boom. Now, this first series, what we're going to be focusing on is the startup of your business. So the things that you need to get right at the beginning. And we'll be talking about that more as we go along. But as with every episode, I'm going to start with a few items of news that I've come across over the past week that affect small businesses in the UK. Okay, the first bit of news that I've come across today is about the government launching a Back British call to action. The UK government is going to license overseas defence contracts to include UK jobs, supply chains and skills investments, a push under the Back British banner. Now, this is something that I've come across before. It's the government trying to get to make large contracts more accessible for SMEs. And it's something that has some mixed efficacy because there are things that small businesses have to do which are difficult. Things like compliance, capacity, skills, having all those policies and procedures in place. So it's there. How effective it will be will remain to be seen. Something that's probably more relevant for Margaret's bailiwick is that UK companies are paying SMEs late at record levels, leaving smaller firms significantly exposed. And this matters because cash flow is critical, isn't it, Margaret?
Cash flow is critical. And I think it's very important when you, especially the larger clients that you have, to really tie them down into your 30 days, your 30-day invoicing and really press it with them.
I've actually noticed, just in the last year, I've noticed some invoices being paid later. Have you noticed this with businesses recently?
I have. I think it may be partly due to the economy, but also the bigger companies can get away with it. So they do. So
yeah,
when they should be paying in 30, they're paying in 60, which is a long time for a small business to wait.
Yeah, absolutely. And the third third bit of news that I found, which made me laugh, is that the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is planning to slash business red tape with estimated savings of nearly £6 billion per year. This is something that we've heard before, isn't
Yeah, I've
it?
Not seen any evidence of that. And I think it's actually going the opposite way with Making Tax Digital coming in and more filings to do. Companies House are really expecting a lot more from us. So I don't see that at all.
So that's interesting because people think about digitisation and technology as making life easier, but are you not seeing that?
Currently, as a sole trader, you make one filing a year of your personal tax return and your accounts, but going forward over a certain level of turnover, you're going to have to submit every quarter and an extra one, so five times a year.
Okay.
And so you're going to have to have digital software to do it.
That's quite significant, isn't it?
It is very, very different.
Okay. We'll come back to that in a minute. And that's three items of news for small businesses for this week. Okay, so I've known Margaret for many, many years, a friend and a friend of the family as well. But you don't necessarily know Margaret as well as I do. So this is the bit where we're going to do what we call a shock interview. It's just a little bit of fun. My first guest was worried as well, but honestly, he said it was
I'm
fine.
I'm very worried.
It's fine, it's fine. just imagine that you're interviewing for a job. And people are asking you inappropriate questions. but first of all, seriously, Margaret, tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So we are a small firm, partnership, two partners and five staff, and we've been going since 1926, but obviously I haven't always been there.
Well, you've been going.
No, oh, okay. We have, but I obviously wasn't always there.
I didn't realise it had been going that long.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, wow. What's the provenance going back that far?
I think it started in London and then it branched out to Northwest London.
Okay.
And at one point there were five offices, but they've all dissipated now. And but we still share the name, Harcastle Burton.
You've separated into separate entities. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
I answer my emails. I answer endless queries. I delegate work. I do some accounts and bookkeeping, and I do some advising. So quite a mix of things, and for quite a different mix of clients, so in size and personality.
Okay. So some of these questions which we shouldn't be asking at a professional job interview these days. So questions that pry too far into someone's private life or make odd assumptions. If I called your friends right now, what would they say were your worst habits?
Going to the pub.
Okay, that's yeah. Okay, yeah, okay. How would your family describe your attitude to work?
I would say I was hardworking, I think. Yeah.
Okay. There's nothing wrong with going to the pub. I mean,
depends how often you do it.
Okay, fair enough. Oh, it always the do you remember when the Chancellor used to have the glass of whiskey at the dispatch box when they were giving you the budget? We're not in those days anymore, but nothing wrong with going and having a drink after work. Questions that might imply subtle discrimination or misplaced judgment described as personality fit questions. Do you have any family commitments that might get in the way of working late?
I do, yeah.
Do you?
I do.
What
yeah.
are they?
I have a grandchild.
Oh, of course you do.
So I have to get up very early every Thursday morning with my rucksack and a load of batch cooking, and I go and look after him every Thursday. So he's my priority on that day.
Okay.
He's my other job.
Okay. Now I know why I can't get hold of you on a Thursday.
Yes.
Noted. Right. Fine. There's a question here that says, how do you feel about being managed by a woman? But that doesn't really apply in your case.
How do you feel
about being managed by a man?
I don't care.
Okay.
As long as they're nice to me, I don't mind.
Yeah, it's fair enough, isn't it? okay, manipulative or impossible questions. I don't know why this is a question. How many golf balls can fit inside a double-decker bus?
Several thousand?
Yeah, I'd have thought so. Yeah. Several million, maybe.
Yeah, no idea.
I think it's a pointless question. if we offered you the job right now, but for less money, would you take it?
No.
Okay, why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
Because I could get another job somewhere else.
Yeah, that's fair enough. and finally, old-fashioned, cringe-inducing wrap-up questions. So when we go for drinks after work at the pub, what would you order?
I would order a glass of red wine.
Okay. Any particular type?
No, don't mind.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not fussy at all.
Not fussy with red wine?
No.
I do like a nice claret.
I do like that. Yeah.
I'm not fussed about pub wine. A bit snobby about my wine. How good are you at handling office drama?
I'm very diplomatic. I've learned to be diplomatic over the years. I find it quite funny sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. you've got five employees. Do you love them all?
Yeah, I do actually. Yeah, they're all great. Excellent. They work hard, and yeah, we meet up. We're a virtual company, so we don't see each other all the time, but we try and meet up every couple of weeks and have a curry or go out somewhere, do a quiz.
100% virtual?
100% virtual.
How does that work?
It's great. It gives flexibility, and we're all women who have had children or have children, and it really works to be around the home. But I think if you live on your own, it's not always nice to be at home working and then be at home again. So this is we do try and meet up.
Yeah, this is a subject that I really fascinates me, because I have quite strong feelings about the whole working from home hybrid things. What problems have you encountered?
I think that we don't communicate enough, because we are isolated in a way. So I don't think we communicate enough. When you could have passed by the office and just asked a quick question, you're not going to do that anymore. You have to save up a list and try and remember what you wanted to know. And so I think that is quite hard.
I think that's one of my reservations, especially in my industry, is that, you know, when we're trying to solve clients' problems, it's much easier if you're sitting next to someone just to be able to confer.
You know, yes, definitely.
Having to make a Teams call or a telephone call, it's not quite the same.
No, it isn't. It isn't, but I have got used to Teams. I used to hate it, but I have got used to it.
Has your IT company helped you with that?
Yes, we've got a fantastic IT company.
Thank you very much. I'd love to hear that. Marvellous. Okay, there we go. That's it. Now we know a little bit about you. Thank you very much. Okay. It wasn't as bad as you thought, was it? Okay, no comment. Right. Okay, so now we're down to the main part of today's meeting, which is to talk to Margaret about her areas of expertise with regards to small businesses and small business accounting. But you get involved in not just the accounting side of things, you get involved in the company's house side of things with and for businesses as well.
We do.
Is that by accident or is that by intent? Is that naturally part of your
role? We've always done it. We've always done the annual submissions. And we're always available to. And now I'm allowed to identify directors through company's house. So I'm an accredited ID person.
Oh, okay. Because that's something new that's just started with company, and frankly overdue. Is identification at company's house, isn't it?
Yes, which is a good idea.
So if you're setting up a new company, do you have to...
You will do that when just after you set it up.
Just after you set it up. You have to identify yourself.
You just have to identify yourself with a passport and a bill or a bank statement, and then you get a code from company's house to say that they've identified you. Okay. They've checked your ID.
Okay. So that... brings me on to the first thing, really. So if you're setting up a new business, there are different types of structure that you can choose.
Correct.
So what are they? What are the pros and cons, and what should point you in different directions?
Well, the simplest form that most people use is the sole trader. So that will be any trade they can do. And it's very simple. You set up a bank account. And you make a submission once a year of your income and expenses. It doesn't have to be complex. So that's traditionally seen as the most simple type of entity that you can be and the quickest to set up.
And you're not actually a legal entity in its own right as a sole trader.
You are a person. Yeah, you're a person.
Yeah.
So you're not distinct from any other entity.
Okay. And what sort of business would use that structure?
I think your plumbers, gardeners, consultants, those sorts of people will use it.
And as we mentioned last week, 5.5 million small businesses in the UK, and a lot of them will choose that route.
Yes.
But what are the other options?
Well, I just want to say about that first route, that because of the Making Tax Digital that I mentioned, that is not going to be... I don't believe that's going to be the simplest option anymore, because
you
have to make a quarterly submission and another submission after that.
Oh, so that's where the five came. So you're going to have to make one submission every quarter
and then one for the end of the year. Yeah.
So it's just like a business, really, doing its VAT returns.
It is. So you've got to have digital software to submit it, or use an accountant to submit it for you, and they're going to be wanting to charge more because they're doing more work. And you're also gradually becoming under more scrutiny from HMRC, as they'll see your quarterly results and then might see that at the end of four quarters, your fifth submission was a bit different and question you on that. So it's not quite as straightforward as it might have been.
Okay. You mentioned software, that you have to have approved Making Tax Digital software.
You do.
Do you use one particularly?
We use Xero.
Any reason why you use that one particularly?
I just find them very simple and straightforward.
Okay.
They're one of the newer companies, and I just feel they've started from the beginning in creating their software.
What other options might there be?
There is QuickBooks, there is Sage, but yeah, our preference is Xero.
And Xero is completely online, so you have to pay a monthly subscription.
Yes, sadly, yeah.
Yes, the days of just going out and buying a CD.
Yes, you can't buy a bureau anymore. You have to pay per client that you've got on there.
Yeah. Okay, so sole trader.
So linked to that then is your unlimited partnership, and they are not required to do the Making Tax Digital quarterly reports yet. They're not on the list, but they will be one day. But that's the same principle. That's easier to set up. It's like a sole trader, but you're just splitting your profits however you like.
So if there were two people setting up a business together,
they would have to be
friends,
a partnership.
Friends or family, that would be a partnership.
Yeah.
And at the moment, they don't have to do that whole
They don't do the quarterly reporting yet. So then you're thinking about limiting liability. So then your other option is a limited company. And a lot of people like that because you are limiting your liability. No one can come after you for your personal stuff if things go wrong.
One of the things that I remember when I set up a limited company a long time ago was that people were still asking you to sign personal guarantees, which kind of defeats the object, doesn't it?
Right. I haven't encountered that lately.
No?
No.
Funnily enough, I haven't encountered that quite so much. This was 20 or 30 years ago when we set up Labyrinth Technology. We had to sign a personal guarantee just to get the credit cards from the bank, because there was effectively a separate loan facility attached to those credit cards.
Oh, I don't think that's happening now.
That's not happening quite so much. Because it always felt a little bit sneaky to me, because you're almost undermining the whole point of limited liability, aren't
exactly,
you?
Exactly, yeah.
So how strong is that liability shield?
It is very strong, yeah. They call it the veil of incorporation, so you're absolutely distinct from that company.
Okay. So limited liability partnership, limited company, what's the difference? When would you choose them?
Limited company, your shareholders should really receive equal dividends. So if you have four shareholders with £1 share each and you have some profit at the end of the year, you have to distribute it equally.
Yes.
And HMRC don't like it if you don't. I mean, you can waive it and do things like that, but they don't like that and they'll catch you for that.
I don't want to get too deep into it, but you can have different types of shares, can't you? Which have different.
You can
dividend.
Have what they call alphabet shares get around that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Limited liability partnership is much more flexible in terms of profit sharing. The only thing with them is that you pay tax on everything you earn during the year, whether or not you pay yourself. Whereas with a limited company, you don't have to distribute all of your income, and as long as it's in the company, it's not your income.
And limited liability partnerships have been in the news recently, haven't they?
They have, and Mrs. Reeves is going to...
Rachel from Accounts, yes. As we like to call it.
Potentially going to increase national insurance on the limited liability partnership, so we'll have to see what she does. It's talk, so I don't know, but...
Yeah, we've got a little while yet until that wonderful fiscal event. We're in that period now where everybody's just making stuff up.
So there might be some restructuring to be considered.
I think someone was saying that they're putting out lots and lots and lots of really bad ideas so that when they only implement one or two of them, you think it's a win.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope that is true. But yeah, I hope that's true. We were promised no tax rises, so...
Okay, so... Four different types of business: sole trader, partnership, limited company, limited liability partnership. Which one do you primarily work with?
I work with all of them, yeah.
Yeah, in equal
there
amounts.
There are fewer LLPs and partnerships. There are fewer of those.
And from a business's point of view, are any of them harder or, easier to put together the required documentation and accounts and everything?
Well, sole trader is the most simple.
At the moment.
Yeah. Limited company, it's a question of starting your company. Then you get your certificate of incorporation. Then you go to the bank and you open a bank account. You link it to your software. And then you submit annually, annual accounts.
And what should your accountant be doing to help you with all of that?
Well, they should be helping you budget. Make sure you compare your budget to your results each month or quarter or whatever. Should be recommending what you take as dividends based on what you are doing during the year. And generally advising on what your tax liability might be and eventually what it will be.
Okay. Budget. So that's something that I'm quite keen on, and we're in the season now where I start thinking very hard about my budget for the next year. Not every business does that. Do you think they should?
I think they absolutely should. Even if they're small, lots of decisions depend on how much turnover they're expecting, what their cash flow is likely to be like.
So how would you go about putting together a budget for a new business?
Well, I think I'd sit down with them and see what they thought their income was likely to be, perhaps have a few scenarios and then pick a medium one perhaps, and then look at their expenses. I think the expenses are easier to define than the income, especially if you're new and you don't know what your turnover is going to be.
If you're starting as a sole trader, can you move up to one of the other?
You can incorporate,
later.
Yes. You can change back as well.
And go back the other way as well.
Yeah. It is a faff. Yeah. So you don't want to be doing it too often.
Yeah, okay. what about VAT?
VAT, so...
Because that's another thing that you might have to consider if you are setting up a small business. When do you have to register for VAT? When do you need to register for VAT? When should you register for VAT?
To register when your turnover reaches 90,000 a year. You can register when you think it's going to be 90,000 in the next year.
And it's not 90,000 at the end of the year, is it? It's if at any point in that year,
yes,
you realise that you've
yes,
hit the 90,000 pounds,
yes,
you
definitely
then have to.
You've got a few
register.
Weeks' grace. Within that, they don't pin you down to the day that you went over that, but yeah, then you must register.
And if you are registered for VAT, then you can claim back the VAT for any business related expenses.
Yeah.
And you can actually do that retrospectively, can't you?
If you can go back six months. Yeah.
So if you set up a new business, you don't register for VAT.
Yeah, so you
keep your receipts and then
you can just bring it in.
You keep all your receipts. Now,
yeah.
And people don't actually keep their physical receipts anymore, do
no,
they?
No, they attach them as a document to their software.
It all goes into the software.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable that...
Not everybody does that.
Are there still some people with the pot on the mantelpiece?
Yeah, of course.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
There's lots of people like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. are you comfortable... That's good enough for record keeping. To keep it in that software and
yes, definitely.
Yeah,
yeah.
So nobody's going to come back to you, and
so anybody can scrutinise that and pull up a receipt or have a look.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the different business structures. We've talked about when to choose one. Is there any one that's going to help you grow particularly better? That's going to be more resilient?
I think definitely limiting your liability, either as a partnership or a company, is a good way to grow.
And there might be a little bit more paperwork at the
yes.
beginning with Companies House.
But people often prefer to deal with companies because they're visible, they can see them.
Yes, and you've got that little limited...
It just feels safer
at the end
to people.
Of your name. It looks
yeah.
It looks a bit more professional,
it just feels safer,
it?
I think.
Yeah. And how easy is it to set up a limited company?
You can do it in a week.
Okay.
Within a week, yeah.
You just go online.
So we use a company called Companies Made Simple, and we tell them what we want, how many directors, how many shares, addresses, give the idea, and they get it set up within days if there's not a problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So you mentioned budgets. That's super important.
Mm-hmm.
What other financial habits do you think that someone starting a new business should get into the habit of doing from day one?
Chasing debts. Make sure that your cash flow is good.
We talked about that a minute ago.
Yeah.
So what are the, it might sound obvious, but what are the dangers of getting that wrong?
I think if you leave it too long and you don't chase, people forget what you've done for them and they're less inclined to pay, or they think they've got away with it. That can be the case, or they just forget. So I think you do need to be chasing your debtors quite regularly to make sure you've got the cash in to pay your staff. So I think that's really important.
And that, of course, your business, your accounting software, you can set it up so that it does some of the chasing automatically, can't you?
You can certainly pull up the right reports, and yeah, it can send off reminders.
And can you, as an advisor, help people to use this software if they've never used it before?
Yes.
And show them around it? And
yes, we can. But we, well, as accountants, we prefer to do it ourselves and charge them.
And that's why we like Margaret, because she's so honest. You don't get any of that from me, do you? Sorry, I do it all myself.
You do.
I only come to you when I've got a problem. And do you find that with a lot of, what's more usual for a client, someone who you do it all for them, or someone who you don't do much for them?
Mostly
at all?
We do it all.
Really?
Yeah. So you're unusual in that you do your own. You're a minority.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. that's my independent streak coming out. It's like, no. We've had a few arguments over the years, haven't we?
We have.
It's like, no, that's not right. It's like, you can't be right. Any other financial habits?
I'd say communicate with your clients. So in my business, I would say they need to know what you've done for them, what you've submitted. You need to have discussions with them, otherwise they're not going to like your bill. So communication is important.
Well, communication is so key in any industry.
It's better to over communicate than under communicate, definitely.
Yeah.
Better to be a pest with them, really, and than not talk to them at all.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you still go and visit people?
Visit, yeah. I have a lot of teams. Yeah, phone calls. I think it depends entirely. It's client based, so every client is different. Some of them don't want to hear much from you. Some want to talk to you all the time.
So if someone's starting a new business and they're going out looking for an accountant, what sort of things should they be looking for? What's the hallmarks of a good accounting practice?
Well, possibly they'd look for a recommendation. From somebody they already know.
That's always a good one. Yeah.
That'd be the best thing. And a good accountant practice would be ones that respond quickly and have up-to-date technology and are friendly.
And have good IT security in place.
Absolutely.
As well. And, I mean, it's obviously that's my area of expertise, but it is something that's so important for
everybody. We totally rely on it. We could not do without it.
And
I wouldn't sleep very well without it.
But, I mean, every business, especially accountants and solicitors, they can be dealing with personal and confidential material,
yeah,
can't they?
And we need to be protected. And also the whole hacking thing is fairly frightening, so we need to know that we're safe.
Yeah. And do you, as accountants, do you deal with personal taxation and things
as
well?
We do, yeah, we do personal tax returns.
What sort of things do you do for individuals?
Well, we might have some high wealth individuals, people with lots of properties, landlords.
Because that ties into corporate stuff as well, doesn't it?
Often a director of a company also has some complicated personal tax affairs, and we do everything.
And it's better when you're dealing with the government to actually have a professional advising you.
Definitely.
Isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Anything else that you would give as advice to someone setting up a new business for the first time?
Well, so I would advise them on what sort of expenses they could claim, what records to keep.
Okay,
yeah.
Expenses to, well, that's, what expenses can we claim? Come on, that's a good one.
Mileage, printing, stationery, computer equipment. There's quite a long list.
But it has got to be tied to business use, hasn't it?
It has, completely,
and
yes.
Completely or?
Well, we can do percentages.
Okay.
So if you wanted to claim some of your phone bill, You only have one mobile phone, so you have to work out what percentage you think is business and claim on that basis. So I think that there we are helpful because we know what's sensible and we know what's normal.
What about people who are working from home? Can you claim some of the...
Yeah, proportion of broadband. Not so much house costs, because that then brings your house into taxation, or potentially...
Business rates.
Yes.
Potentially.
Yes.
Yeah, which you don't want to get into at all.
So you kind of claim a use of home based on a weekly calculated amount rather than tying it to your bills. So okay. That's something people don't normally know.
Are there any mistakes that you've seen people make in the first year or two of setting up a new business? Things that you think, oh my goodness, good grief, why did you do that?
I think mistakes are often being too optimistic about how much their turnover is going to be. They think they're going to make a lot of money and they don't necessarily bring in what they thought and they start to spend.
And that comes back to the budgeting,
yeah.
Being realistic about your budgeting. Yeah.
And what work you're going to get.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
I think that's the most common one. Then they're not as successful as they think. And yeah.
So how long does it take for someone to sort of get a feel for how things are going, do you think?
I think after the first year, I think you have a good idea of where your business is going.
Is there a sort of growth figure that people should be making as a minimum?
Not necessarily, not as long as their expenses are covered, yeah, by the income.
Yeah, okay. All right. So one of the things that I asked you to prepare was a question for the competition.
Oh, yep.
Which is, so Labyrinth Technology is very, very kindly giving away a Galaxy Tab A9 tablet. And to win this, you will have to answer 6 questions, 1 question from every episode. You go to the website and enter the answer to the questions. Matt gave the first question last week. Margaret's question is...
Okay, my question is, what is the most common business structure in the UK?
Most common business structure in the UK? Right, okay.
A, sole trader. B, partnership. C, limited liability partnership. D, limited company.
So a sole trader, a partnership, a limited liability partnership, or a limited company. Okay. Well, I think I have an answer in mind, but okay. Obviously that's not the point.
Okay.
Okay. So thank you, Margaret, for that. Let's go to the website, enter the details, and the winner will be drawn at random from everybody that answers all 6 questions correctly. Okay. Is there anything else that you want to add before we round things off for today, Margaret?
Not especially, but I would say if you be confident, if you think you have a good business idea and you want to set up your own business, go for it, I would say.
Absolutely.
And we can help.
Yes, and Hardcastle Burton can help. That's absolutely correct. Okay, so Margaret, what we're asking everybody to do is give us 3 bullet points, concrete pieces of advice to go on the website, which every business should follow. So from your area of expertise, what are your 3 blueprint bullets?
Okay, in short, number 1, communicate with your clients. Number 2, have a budget and compare it to your actual results. Number 3, chase your debtors.
So communicate with your clients, do a budget. I actually had a client who was running a very long-standing business and they couldn't understand my advice to do a budget. They literally couldn't get their head around the concept at all. And to me, it's just second nature. So do a budget. And what was the 3rd thing?
Chase your debts. Sorry. Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, I couldn't read my writing there.
I'm very good at it. I'm like Scrooge McDuck counting my pennies at the end of the month getting on there. So, I use Xero, and Xero is very good.
Xero is a very helpful tool.
For showing you what you're owed, doing the reports, yes, doing a little bit of chasing for you and just showing you where you should go. So that's absolutely perfect. Thank you very much indeed for your three blueprint bullets. So, Margaret, the final section is called the scorecard. And this is where we're asking everybody to rate the small business environment in the UK. And this is not party political. We just want to try and build up a picture of where you, as a professional advisor, where you feel that we are in the UK at the moment. And all of these scores are going to be on the website. So you're going to see a picture of how all of our professionals feel things are going at the moment. So first of all, overall, on a scale of 1 to 5, how supportive do you think the current political and regulatory climate for small businesses are in the UK?
Well, despite a lot of moaning from the country in general about business setups, I think it's a very good country to do business in. So I would give it a 4 out of 5.
Okay. Regulation and red tape. How would you rate the level of bureaucracy small businesses face today?
From what I understand from other countries, so I have an Italian client and a French client, it is a lot worse there than it is here.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Okay. I was expecting something different. No. So 1 is unbearable, but 5 is efficient and light touch. Where would, on a scale of 1 to 5?
I'd give it 4. Yeah.
Okay. Taxation and incentives. How would you rate the tax environment for small businesses right now, taking into account corporation tax, VAT thresholds and things like R&D credits?
I don't think it's that great on incentivising small businesses, especially with the NIC going up lately. I don't think it is terribly incentivising.
Okay.
It makes it, it's quite a fearful thing to go into business. And if you're faced with taxes, and it's hard.
Okay. Scale of 1 to 5?
3. I mean, it's not impossible. So 3. Yeah.
No, you're a bit nice, aren't you? access to finance and support. How would you rate the availability of funding and credit for small businesses?
I've had mixed views on that. Some of my clients seem to come across it very easily and others don't. And I'm not really sure why.
Is that something that you can advise people on, helping to find finance?
Not really. That's not our area of expertise.
Okay. Who would you go to for that?
I'll go to a financial advisor for that.
Yeah. And presumably you know people.
We do.
Okay. scale of 1 to 5 for finance and support?
Yeah, I'd say 3.
Okay. Infrastructure and skills, digital connectivity, transport, utilities, that sort of thing.
I think that's very good in this country.
Really?
Do you not?
No. It's terrible. No. I'm completely independent.
If you're talking about broadband and getting on the train,
I'm thinking of the fact that it takes me an hour to go a mile in London at the moment, but
in a car.
In a car, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, go on. This is all about you. This is not about me. This is about you. Go on. Scale of 1 to 5.
I'll give it 4. Yeah.
Okay. And finally, stability and confidence. How would you rate the level of stability and predictability in UK policy environment for small businesses at the moment?
I think at the moment we're being held waiting for a budget. And I think I wish that budget had come sooner so that we can all work out where to go with it.
We seem to get into this state every year at the moment, don't we? We're just, for 2 or 3 months before the fiscal event, we're just waiting to see what's going to happen.
I think it brings everything to a standstill, so people don't buy or sell houses, they don't make business decisions.
Are you seeing some of that?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So, scale of 1 to 5?
We'd have to go 2 then.
Okay, lowest score for me. Okay. Thank you very much indeed, Margaret Anthony from Hardcastle Burton. That was nowhere near as bad as you thought it would be, was it?
No, it was all right.
thank you very much indeed for your insight and wisdom. Margaret,
pleasure.
Would be very happy to hear from you if you're setting up a small business and you need any help and advice. So that's it for this episode of Blueprint to Boom. Thank you very much indeed for joining us again, and we look forward to seeing you next time.